Hello, welcome to White Sands National Monument's very first podcast. For our first one, I thought I'd tell you a little bit about how both the National Park Service and the monument got their start. But let's begin by answering a question that we rangers tend to hear a lot. And that question is, what's the difference between a national monument and a national park? Well, the main difference lies in who does the designation. If Congress designates an area, then it becomes a national park. If the president does it, then it becomes a monument. So that's really the only difference between the two of them. And now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's talk a little bit about the National Park Service and how it came to be. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but I just want to give you a basic idea of how things happened. So I'd like you to think back a little ways to about 200 years ago. We're going to think about the year 1832 and a man named George Catlin. Now, the Civil War wasn't even a blip on the proverbial radar yet. European pioneers were pushing westward, settling and clearing the land as they went. All of them clung to this idea of manifest destiny, which was, and you've probably heard this idea before, this term of manifest destiny, maybe from a history class or something, but it was the belief that Anglo-Saxon pioneers were destined to settle the entire North American continent. So that was the prevailing idea at the time. Now, Catlin himself was also heading west at this time, but his reasons were very different. As an artist, he was famous for his portraiture of American Indians, and because his work brought him in direct contact with Native peoples, he began to develop an appreciation for their cultures. Now, as he traveled to the Dakotas, he started to worry about the impact that this westward expansion would have, not only on American Indian civilization, but also on the wildlife and wilderness of the nation. Now, as a result, Catlin was the first person in American history to propose what was really a very revolutionary idea. He called this idea a nation's park. He felt that the government should be able to preserve these things by some policy that they would set forth. Now, you have to really appreciate just how revolutionary and progressive an idea this was. It was in direct opposition to the notion that was driving everyone else at the time, which was manifest destiny. People really had no interest in preserving native cultures or natural wonders during this time period. They wanted to conquer them. They did not want to preserve them. So it really was an incredibly progressive thinking on Catlin's part. By 1864, his idea really caught on. Congress donated Yosemite Valley to California in 1864, and they were to preserve it as a state park. By 1872, Congress decided to preserve Yellowstone County in both Montana and Wyoming, and this gave America its first real national park. But this brought up a whole new problem, and that was the question of who was going to manage it. At the time, there was no government agency to take care of these newly created parks, and so the duty was given to the Department of the Interior. Now, as you can imagine, the Department of the Interior had its hands full. It was, of course, the official managing office, but they really didn't have anybody to enforce laws on hunting, vandalism, and timber cutting, and this was very desperately needed. So what happened was the Army detailed troops to oversee a few of these parks. Now, this was a wonderful thing for the parks. Military engineers and cavalrymen created roads and buildings and acted as law enforcement, so they did a lot of work within the parks. Other parks and monuments were looked after by civilian appointees. Now, despite these efforts, it really did become clear very quickly that an agency was still needed, some kind of formal agency that would be dedicated to the care and maintenance of these parks and monuments was still very desperately needed. Now, this idea had a lot of support, and in 1916, legislation was signed that created the National Park Service within the Department of the Interior. This was great timing, because during the 30 years between 1890 and 1920, many more national parks were created. Now, Theodore Roosevelt himself created 18 national monuments during his time in office, and by the creation of the National Park Service in 1916, the Department of the Interior had 14 national parks and 21 national monuments under its care. So you can see it had grown quite a bit in just a few years. Now, how about White Sands? How did it become a monument? Well, it all started in 1912. Senator A.B. Fall had the idea to create a national park here in the Tularosa Basin. but his proposal for a Mescalero National Park didn't really have any support. By 1921, even though he'd moved on to the position of the Secretary of the Interior, he still had a lot of ideas for parks here in the Tularosa Basin, and that included the White Sands Dune Field. Now, a local man named Tom Charles championed this idea. He seized on it, and he really went after it and promoted this idea. Now, his argument was a very compelling one, and I'm going to quote him directly. He said that gypsum may be divided into two classes, commercial and inspirational. The former everyone has, but as for recreational gypsum, we have it all. No place else in the world do you find these alabaster dunes with the beauty and splendor of the Great White Sands. Now, his enthusiasm was contagious, and the idea for the White Sands National Monument quickly gained favor. It was very quickly determined that the dunes met the criteria for national park status. And on January 18, 1933, President Hoover named the Dune Field a national monument just before he left office. Now, the naming of the monument was timely indeed, because at the time the Great Depression was still going on. It had begun in 1929. So economic recovery plans were put into play by the Roosevelt administration. Now, one of these plans was the Works Progress Administration, or WPA, which was later renamed as the Works Projects Administration. Now, the agency was responsible for many public works projects, providing employment to thousands of unemployed men. So this was great for people at the time. Some of these projects included construction of roads and facilities in many of the national parks. And here in White Sands, the WPA actually did a lot of projects here. They built the visitor center, the administrative building, park residences, the maintenance facilities. And all of these buildings are still in service. We still use them today. Now, since its creation, White Sands National Monument has seen a steady increase in visitation. 12,000 people visited the monument in 1933. By 1948, that number had increased to 100,000, and then to 300,000 by 1957. And White Sands wasn't the only park to see an increase in visitor numbers. The following years, especially the years after World War II, park visitation across the nation increased tremendously. The problem, however, was that most of these parks weren't equipped to deal with this huge influx of visitors. So in 1956, a program called Mission 66 was implemented. Now, this was a 10-year plan that was aimed at improving and expanding park visitor services by 1966, which would have been just in time for the National Park Service's 50th anniversary. Now, as part of this program, many parks and monuments were inducted into the Park Service. Visitor centers and comfort stations were built, and existing park facilities were rehabilitated. That's quite history, huh? So we are now heading towards the 100th anniversary of the National Park Service's very illustrious career. We currently, as of today, have almost 400 parks under the care of the National Park Service, and visitation to all of these parks continues to increase. White Sands National Monument alone receives an average of 500,000 visitors a year from around the world. Now, why? Well, there's a variety of reasons. We offer a huge variety of programs, such as our Sunset Stroll and Full Moon Night concerts. For visitors to White Sands, especially on the Full Moon Nights, those moments spent on the dunes, listening to local musicians under the light of the moon, or even watching a prismatic sunset as it spreads across the darkening sky, these moments create lasting memories that they will never forget. They take them with them forever. And so that's it. There you have it. The history of the National Park Service and White Sands National Monument itself. From its early days to today, the NPS has a long history of caring for and preserving special places like the Dune Field here. And park rangers are caretakers that follow in the footsteps of a long line of caretakers that goes all the way back to the military in the late 1800s. Their responsibility is to preserve and protect America's amazing landscapes and the rich tapestry of human stories of struggle and triumph that shape who we are as a cultural group. And this story doesn't stop at America's borders. As the first system of its kind, the NPS serves as a role model for establishing protected areas around the globe. This is America's best idea, exported worldwide.